This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good evening, welcome to another edition of That Mill Podcast. The theme music is playing in the background, more as a request from Mr. Joe Zambo, who joins us tonight. He's, if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see that he's writing down his show notes by the looks of it.
How are you doing, guys?
All good. And we've got the one and only Gracie, who's had a barnet cut. I would love to have a barnet cut, but unfortunately, I am follically challenged for a long while now. I am what they class as the proper Millwall haircut. So, it is what it is. So, welcome to the show, Gracie. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. You well?
I'm good. I'm all good, yeah.
All right, Joe, you good?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Loving your hair, mate. It's really nice.
Oh, thanks.
Don't mess it up. You ruined it now.
I touch up in the old hair, yeah.
It's made you look about 16 again, fella. Do you know what I mean?
Well, do you know, I wanted to recapture my youth.
I mean, I've got to ask it. It's probably really, really unprofessional and all of that, Joe, Gracie. But how was the Sunderland show tonight?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Let's leave it at that, shall we? I went on a Sunderland, I don't even know the name of it.
RWS or something, isn't it?
Yeah, really, I don't know, it was a bit strange.
RWS Productions or something it's called. Listen, it's a new kid starting out, so everyone needs to start somewhere, but it's a bit strange. Check it out, we'll put the description in the in the show notes of this show and have a check out. If you're sitting on the bog and you want to watch it, it's probably going to give you a good 10 minutes, 15 minutes of entertaining TV. Anyway, let's move forward and be professional. We're joining it midweek after our 1-1 draw with Sunderland, with some controversial decisions, some shit refereeing, even shittier linesmen. And a offside decision, what probably was an offside, technically, if you read the lines. I think he's very open to various communications. I mean, Phil Clark, good evening, Phil. Good morning, Phil. Good afternoon, Phil. Whenever you're listening to this, I just thought I'd cover all bases. He posted something earlier, someone posting about the decision and the rules and everything else, and it seems as if it was very open. But let's crack on, and we'll start with you, Mr. Zampa. Thoughts on Sunderland?
I don't think they gave us much of a problem, to be fair. I mean, the first half, I can't recall them sort of troubling us or creating many chances. I thought we were in control. We created chances. Okay, there were probably half chances. Earlier on, right to the beginning, I think, if I remember right, I think it was Honeyman that put Bradshaw through on the right channel. He cuts in, their defender basically pulls him down. He gets his hand over his shoulders and he brings him down the box. Okay, Bradshaw kind of goes down a little bit more theatrically than he needed to. But it was a perfect claim for a penalty there. Referee just waved it away, wasn't interested. I remember the Bennett chance. Again, it was Honeyman that pulled the ball across to Bennett. That chance was nearly missed with one of the posts. And of course, there was a Cresswell charge before half time. I think it was a scramble corner, and he sort of swiveled, didn't he, on the ball and went over the bar. So we had two or three chances there that first half, a couple of chances the second half. And overall, I was quite pleased with the way we played. I think whether the Sunderland played badly, made us look good, I'm not quite sure, but I think I wasn't really impressed with Sunderland. And 1-1, I think they'd be quite lucky, quite fortunate for Sunderland to come away with a point where I think really for us it was 2 points drop, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what we said on the live show the other day. I mean, Alex, you were obviously there up high in the God section. What was your take on it?
I thought at the end of the game, I thought, do you know what, a draw is a fair result at the end of it. I felt both teams had spells. I felt first half was really, scrappy first half, wasn't it? There was a lot of challenges going in. It seemed like every 5 minutes there was a free kick or there was bits, bobs, other crap going on that you're thinking, really, just let the game flow.
He didn't let the game flow, did he, at all? He was stop starting, pulling people apart and all that sort of shit.
Yeah, it was. It was, the game wasn't allowed to flow. And that's what sort of Tony Mowbray said, actually, in his post-match press conference. He was saying that it was frustrating more than anything because neither team were able to actually get out and play their game, which is quite right, to be honest, in that opening first half. I thought the second half was good. But as a whole, I thought the game was a good advert for Championship football. With two teams who actually... And a point suited both teams because neither team wanted to lose. And if you think about it, a point kept both of them in the rack, both of them in and around that area coming into... During February, which is it's a crazy month. I think we got 7 games in February. So
yeah, this is our only week off, and then we go Saturday, Tuesday. It's definitely an interesting one. Then the beginning of we got March in, and then the beginning of April we've got obviously the Easter weekend. And again, we've got Friday, Monday. We've got some games.
It also looks like Luton won't be rearranged either because they're 3-0 down at Grimsby at the minute in the FA Cup. So that looks like that will actually take place when it's supposed to take place.
Who's winning between?
Isn't it? That's a Tuesday night. I think that one isn't it.
Who's winning between Sheffield United and Wrexham?
Oh, it was 1-0 to Sheffield United. Then Ex-Munning just scored a cracking penalty. So it's now...
Oh, so it's 1-0.
Wow. I'm on.
I mean, that, to be fair, right, as much as I want Sheffield United to win that, purely so that they end up fucking up the league, but that's got everything written all over it to be an absolute fucking movie in the making there. And if they beat Sheffield and go on, I mean, who have they got next? Is it... West Ham, Man U? Who is it? Man U, really?
No, Tottenham, I think.
Tottenham.
I think Tottenham go there if they win, yeah.
I mean, that'd be a big draw for them, but Christ. Yeah, I can't see the Welsh police being too happy with fucking Tottenham going there, to be fair, but yeah. That'd be fun in games. Especially when Ryan Reynolds done that Welcome to Wrexham piece on hooligans, didn't he? Explaining what hooligans were. That could be an interesting one for him, so... Yeah. We're winning to Saturday's game. Quite disappointed that, or I know you were, Joe, because you put the team sheet up like we do before the game. We sort of make a guess, or Joe makes a guess of who's going to be the starting 11, and he normally gets in first so that we can't all put one in. So well, you copied us, so he gets it in first. And he put Hutchinson in the team, and unfortunately Hutchinson is injured for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Did we miss eight?
I still don't know the extent of his injury, he's going to be out for sort of at least maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And to be fair, I didn't think Cresswell did too badly against Sunderland on Saturday. I don't recall him sort of making too many mistakes or putting a foot wrong. He made some real crucial tackles. I think for the goal that Heyman scored, if you look back at that, it was actually his initial tackle. He did like a double tackle. Then he won the ball. The ball was played over across to Bennett. And then, of course, Bennett then had the, I think it was a shot from Fleming, and then Saville's offside, which then was disallowed, but Huntington put the ball away. So Crespo, I think, generally had a fairly good game. I think he was quite commanding, looked quite confident. He looked good on the ball. His distribution weren't too bad. So the trouble with did I say Fleming, sir? I meant Crespo. The trouble with Crespo is the consistency, isn't it? Because we've seen him do it from time before. He'll have a good game, maybe having even have two good games in a trot, and then suddenly the third game, it's just calamity Crespo. Like, it's just, you know, missing the intended pass, miss the poker, or lose the ball, or, you know, just do something out of the extraordinary, and everyone gets on his back again.
Did you know that Joe's real job is writing tabloid headlines for national newspapers? What was the other one? Vagina of locksmith, fog slammer, and all of that. So yeah, he's
a magic man. Yeah. No,
so, do you think it was probably
I should been a troll here? I'm not a troll. Obviously,
no, you're not a troll.
I never boo a Millwall player. I never give him a hard time.
No, Joe's not a troll. He's bigger than 4'11". just 4'11" and a half. But yeah, no. Yeah. Do you think it was? I saw some people on Twitter saying that it was probably the best game Creswell's played in a Millwall shirt.
I think it's definitely one of them. He has had a couple of good ones near the start, I think, if you remember, when he first played.
Yeah, when he scored,
He looked pretty good, didn't he? Yeah. And I don't know, he just seemed to have this kind of appetite, I think, for the game. I mean, I was looking at him, and I was comparing him to Ballard. I don't know whether many other people, many other listeners, would agree with that. I was kind of making sort of comparisons between Ballard and him. And Ballard looked quite good, looked quite comfortable. He was quite assured at the back, weren't he? I think, you know, he didn't look out of sorts. But looking at Ballard, he didn't look like anything amazing for me. A couple of times, I think Bradshaw kind of got the better of him. I mean, one thing I must say, again, I sound really dreadful when I'm saying this. I feel like I'm always giving players a hard time. I've always said Bradshaw is shit at holding the ball up. He can't play as a target man role. The ball never sticks to him. But to be fair, against Sunderland, he held the ball up really well. There's many times the ball was played into him. His touch was good. He'll lay it off. I think he held the line really well up front there. But Ballard didn't look that impressive, to be honest with you. I didn't think he was that great. Whereas Creswell, I thought, looked like the better player of the two of them.
So that's quite controversial because, I mean, again, you know, Phil Clark, hello, mate. He's posted some good tweets this week, so I'm probably going to name check him a bit this week. But yeah, he posted about, you know, was Ballard one of the worst decisions not taking him? You know, should we have really gone for Ballard and tried to get him in? Because in the current team, he would give us, he was good for us when he was in. And then obviously, we didn't want to make that payment because we saw something dodgy. I mean, the rumour is that he failed two medicals of us and we wanted to take him on loan for another year before potentially buying him. But do you think it would give us a real benefit if he was in the team now?
I think he'd definitely be a good player for us to have in our squad at the moment. The trouble is, with these sort of players carrying these injuries, you just can't guarantee, can you, from one game to the next, whether they're going to have another episode of injury and be on the sidelines for sort of, you know, 2, 3, 4 months. And we can't afford that. I mean, we've got too many players at the moment, the likes of Leonard and Bennett and, you know, one or two others that do go injured, unfortunately, and do miss out a lot of game time for us. And I think Mill being extra cautious at the time, probably looked at Ballard as, you know what, it's a risk too big to take. So I agree with Phil in the sense that, yeah, in hindsight, knowing that he's actually playing games at the moment, he probably could have been a good signing for us. But if you remember when Sunderland did sign him, he did get injured soon after, didn't he? And we were all kind of like,
quite a while out as well.
Oh, we botched the bullet there, didn't we? And yeah, and he was out for some time, like Gracie says, but he's now playing again. I think he's played, you know, quite a few games consistently, and he seemed okay. He looks okay against us, but you know, God forbid, he could break down next journey for a couple of months. So
yeah,
it's a risk. It's a risk that can't really afford to take. So I agree with Phil, but I think in our situation, we've got to be a bit careful, won't we?
Yeah, that's it. Sunderland Alex, what's your views on what's been said so far? Then Ballard and Calamity Creswell. That's quite a good name, isn't it? So yeah. think you'll like it, but yeah.
No, I don't think you will like it too much, got to be honest. Now, look, I've got to say, I think he was quite assured on Saturday. I was a little bit worried when the team sheet came out because there was rumours going around all morning that Hutch was out. We did try and find out beforehand if he was out, but we didn't get very far trying to find that out. But I am considering, you know, he was up against Joe Gelhart. I was a little bit worried because I thought, you know, this guy scored goals in the Premier League for Leeds last year. And then you sort of realise, oh, hold on a minute, they are teammates at Leeds. But no, he dealt with everything he had to deal with quite well. There wasn't really any occasions I was worried about him. And of course, he's a big threat in the box from corners, set pieces. I mean, he scored four times this season, hasn't he? So you know, he's clearly someone that... and I'd say in the future, he will be someone who will be a lot more assured. I do think he's... At the minute, you can tell that he's that young defender that's still learning the trade. And this loan spell would have been good for him, I think, if he played a few more games. But obviously, when he was signed back in the summer, the thought process was we'd still be playing with a back three or three centre-halves. Yeah. So he would have got a lot more game time. But obviously, he's not had that this year. I mean, I'm surprised Leeds didn't take up the option to recall him.
There's no need for him now, is there, really? Yeah. They're not going to want him and they don't want to take him back just in the off chance that he don't go back out. They want to develop him and get him playing football so that maybe next season they can bring him back. And also, not being funny, but Jesse had his own way of playing, didn't he? He had his American way of playing, you know, where you send your quarterback out to the left-hand side and throw him the ball. Oh, no, sorry. That's the wrong game. That's a round, a controversial round there. I did a video earlier for Pitch Football and they asked, you know, for a couple of us to do some videos on who you think the next Leeds manager would be. And I said, there's only one man for the job. He's proven that he can take teams down. He is the only manager probably in history of a rival manager to bring Millwall fans together. And that is the one and only special agent, Avram Grant. That's the man to me who should go to Leeds and take him down. Do you know, this season, realistically, we could see Everton, West Ham and Leeds potentially get relegated.
That'd be terrific, wouldn't it? Can you imagine that?
Can you imagine that we go up?
Oh, Joe, we bypass. I'll tell you one thing. The Met Police would be happy about that if they come down and we went and
they'd fucking be the police. They'd have a nightmare than that. But I'll tell you, Joe. Alex. One thing for you to answer: how was the press conference, and was there anything in there, what was of interest to a degree?
Yeah, it was all right. It wasn't too bad. Obviously, we found out about Hutch's groin injury. We weren't told an extent of how long that could be, other than we were told weeks rather than days type thing. We asked about Mason Bennett's injury, if he knew anything in the immediate aftermath of the game. It's definitely a break of some sort from what they can... From what they can tell, because the oxygen came on and he was down for quite a while, wasn't he?
So the results haven't come out yet. No one knows whether there's a break or a very, very sort of severe sprain or don't know.
No, I mean, it's definitely a break. I mean, from what you could see when the team were on the pitch treating him, you could tell, I mean, they did the break sign and... the oxygen came out, which is two real signs of a brain.
Like pain threshold would be a bit of a pussy, maybe. Not thinking.
I don't think so, mate. I don't think so.
I've done it for Bennett now. I done Voggy. I've done Bradshaw. Who else has left?
Bennett, listen, okay. Mate. Listen, right? Voggy's a big motherfucker, right? And you're giving it to him. Benny's a big lump too, and you're giving it to him. Chris Wood's quite a big lump too. He's a little fella, but he's quite a stocky little fella.
That's all right.
Do you know, one day, yeah, the problem is, yeah, they've watched this on YouTube. They're going to see your picture. One day you're going to be walking across the car park, and Benny's just going to run you over in his fucking BMW. Do you know what I mean?
I know. I'm not like this. I have disabled signs. I'm not on the floor. We have a permanent sort of marker. I thought those Scooby-Doo sort of episodes. And cars.
I mean, it's sad for Bennett if he is a break because, you know, there is a good player. There is a good player in him. Oh, just that he is made of glass.
And you know, and also he's one of the nicest people that you get to talk to as well. You know, we've interviewed him after games, and he's really, really nice. He's really genuine.
And I think he's really sure for him. I mean, he's very passionate about the club. I mean, looking back, when we score that goal, okay, it was disallowed, the honeymoon. I mean, they're all celebrating amongst themselves. But if you look at Bennett's reaction, he's gone up to the to the fans. He's really come to the Mill Sports, really sort of going mental. Yeah, you can see how much it means to him and how much he wants us to do well. You know, I think
I think he's desperate to see the club do well. I think there's Tom's stood by him. You know. With all of his injury problems, I mean, he's had so many injury problems. I think, and I'm not totally sure how accurate this is, but I think he's only completed 90 minutes once or twice on Millwall.
Millwall, it's the only team he's completed 90 minutes with as well, isn't it?
Wow. We haven't mentioned it. What do you guys make of Watmore and Burke? Obviously, we've seen Burke before, but...
Watmore was all right. Yeah. I think Watmore needs a bit more time on the field rather than fucking, which we'll come on to in a bit with Rowett's substitution timeline. But I think they look good. It looks as if possibly he's going to be putting Burke up top, which could be interesting because Burke's got some terrifying pace. As long as he stops wearing those fucking dodgy Crocs what he puts on his Instagram page and some of the clothing he wears. But, you know, hey-ho, each to their own. Footballers have got more money than sense, but, yeah.
I saw him wearing an outfit the other day. I was sure he was wearing a Teletubby sort of outfit, weren't he? He's like a sort of hood on there and...
Do you know, I'm tempted to just... I'm tempted to post every time he posts something. Put it on the story. Put it on our storyline.
Don't snitch.
Just put it on the stories. Every time he posts a picture of him wearing the dodgy Crocs or something, I'll just stick it on our story on Instagram and just keep sharing it and all of that and see, you know.
I've got this one that I can see, and I don't know what it's supposed to be. It's like he's in some form of onesie. With a mask.
That's what I think I saw. I think it's on.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Or Lala, or what they call Dipsy, or yeah.
Welcome to that Millwall webcast where Joe will slag the players. He won't put them on the pitch, but he will give all fashion tips.
I don't know why this come out of my mouth. To be fair, he can carry it off. I couldn't carry it off like he can, but yeah, he seems to do right. But going back to substitutions, I was just really impressed personally with Watmore, with Burke. And I think they didn't surprise me because I knew what they'll give us. They'll give us a bit of pace, a bit of directness. And you saw that right from the off. I think it's almost like Watmore's first chance. Straight away, he turned the old rockets on, didn't he? And just went, took the defender on, drove the ball. Burke did something similar on the other side. And straight away, our style of play just changed. We were set up for the counter. And that was really pleasing to see. I quite enjoyed that. Disappointing. My one of my favourite players, Vogsamer, he come on, didn't do much. I mean, and it kind of played him out of the right a little bit. He kind of switched in the middle. But what was really interesting to see, and I wonder if many Millwall fans saw this who was watching the game live, there was a moment where he sort of went out on the right wing. Fleming had the ball, and he was looking at Vogsamer to make a move, and he actually did this signal. If you're not watching this and you're listening to this, he actually clapped his hands like a little kid in the playground, you know, to a little kid, telling him to move, like, go on, move, what are you doing? Like, move on. And Vogtsheimer didn't know what to do. And then, for enough, he might pass the ball back, and he was going mental at Vogtsheimer. And then the ball went out of play. Vogtsheimer weren't happy, and I'm pretty sure there might have been Billy Mitchell, McNamara, that was trying to kind of calm Vogtsheimer down, to hear about the way how Fleming was telling him, come on, move, what are you doing? Just, you're just standing there, you know? And it's interesting seeing Fleming do that, because visually, you fit it to a big, big crowd. He's only got a few doubters, you know. I like myself, so I think it's fucking brilliant. But
to do that, I mean, you and the other Hayes arm regulars.
Yeah, I ain't doing Bob Sam any favours. But the point I'm making is it must be quite frustrating for the players on the pitch as well, because they probably see it as well. And it's disappointing. And I know he's on the bench and you've got to use him. I would much rather see Essay come on, if that's where you've got to play him on the right-hand side. If you had every intention to play Burke in the middle, what's the point of having Vogtsheimer to play him on the right? And you've got Essay, who's been playing brilliantly there when he comes on. So it's, I don't quite get it, to be honest with you, but... You
know, it's quite interesting seeing Richard Cowley saying that, you know, because of Bennett's injury, Essay's going to get more pitch time.
Gary didn't say that in the post-match press conference, actually.
I think that could be very, very interesting, because if he gets a good 10 games behind him running consistent on a few games, you think that kid's going to be on fire.
Well, the thing is, players available at the moment, we are very light up front. Yeah, we've got Bradshaw who can play up front. Vogtsheimer, he allegedly can play up front. From what I've seen, he can't really do a job up front, but yeah, he can play up front. You've got Fleming to do a job up front. You've got the boy, Tom Lehe. How do you pronounce it, Gracie? Is it Lehe? The 23s, who I think is worth giving a go up front. But what's going to happen is now you're going to have a rotation of players playing across that attacking three, the likes of Honeyman. You've got Watmore, you've got Burke, you've got Fleming, Essay as well, Vogtsheimer potentially. You know, so you've got players that will be rotating in different roles. Honorable mention for Honeyman, by the way. I thought he had a really, really, really good game. Again, he's had a few knocks with a few supporters. You know, not particularly impressed with his performance in the Millwall shirt. But I think...
Man of the match.
He looked up for
it. I thought he was very good, actually.
He was. He was, to be fair. He was very unlucky that chance the second half. I think you saw that one when I think it might have been... was it Matt Lamar that pulled the ball across to him? And he hit this sort of shot. Went to the top corner. The ref made a really good save. Again, yeah, he looked lively, set up a good chance for Bennett in the first half, a good chance for Bradshaw. Again, a goal disallowed. He just looked busy, he looked up for it. Whether it's because it was Sunderland, I don't know if they wanted to impress against his old club, but he certainly looked good. And I like to see him involved in the next sort of few games. But now Rowe's got to try and work out a system where he can play these players, because you've got Southwood and Mitchell that's going to play in midfield. You then got to decide who you're going to play on that attacking three. You've got Burke, you've got Watmore, you've got Fleming, you've got Honeyman. So you've got four fairly good players that are kind of in form, five for three sort of places there. And then, of course, you've got Bradshaw up front.
But that could be quite an interesting thing, because realistically, you've got Bennett in and you've got Savile in the centre. And you've got Shackleton? Yeah, Mitchell Samuel. So Mitchell and Savile. And then potentially you've got Shackleton who could swap with one of them to suddenly put some fresh legs in that area. You've got Leonard coming back, so potentially you can swap the midfield halfway round. So realistically, with the five subs, give or take... Yeah. We're not going to change the back four, but realistically, we could end up changing the attacking three and the centre midfield and the midfielders pretty much second half. But then the problem is with Gary, he loves that 75-minute bring on subs, when to me, I think realistically, if we're going to bring subs on, we need to bring them on at 60, 65 minutes and let them get into the game and do something to it. Because I think bringing them on too late is just a nightmare. I think it's a nightmare bringing, you know, if I was a player and I was coming on at 75, it's going to take me a good 10 minutes to suddenly suss out the flow of the play. It's all right watching it and you think, yeah, it's quite a fast game, but it's going to take you to make sure that you get into it without fucking getting yourself injured. And then all of a sudden, you're in it, and before you know it, it's blown up and it's game over. So 60, 65 minutes, you've got a good amount of time, 10 minutes to get in, then you've still got a good 15, 20 minutes left to make a change to the game. I mean, I don't know, am I talking bollocks or do you boys agree? Well,
I think
I thought you were going to say, well, actually, yeah, you are talking
about
the players? Now he's coming after me.
Thing is, I think the Watmore one happened because it had to. Obviously, Ben being injured, he was a natural replacement coming on. I think Burke needed to come on a bit sooner. I thought it was a little bit unfair. Was it Honeyman that came off for Burke, from memory?
No, it's Bradshaw. Bradshaw
came off for Burke. Honeyman came off for Vogelsammer, yeah.
Yeah. So you had Vogelsammer and Burke come on together, I think, at the same time, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, 75 minutes, yeah.
And Honeyman gave off the pitch, didn't he, at the time? And that was quite late-ish in the game. So they've been good seeing Burke come on sooner as a single substitution. But again, who do you take off? It'd be unfair to remove, you know, Fleming or Honeyman, who have many good games in that attacking three. What I was quite surprised with is Rowett sticking with his existing players and not starting Watmore and Burke. Because what I did, it did two things. One, I think he respected his players to sort of say, right, although we've got Burke and Watmore, I'm not going to just start these guys, give them, you know, an easy sort of ride in the team there. But what it also done in turn, I think it made the players who were picked to start, the likes of Honeyman, the likes of Bennett before he got injured, to really kind of like, you know, pull their socks up and work their arse off and play well. And it did. You got a really good reaction from them. So I think they must be thinking to themselves, right, we've got two new signs on the bench here that want our shirt, want our position, our place. We're going to have to play for our position. And I think they did. You know, and to be fair, they're fortunate for Bennett now being injured, because Watmore will press like that position on the left-hand side. But there's still the argument now to say, right, do you drop Honeyman for Burke, or do you start Honeyman and put Burke on the bench again for the next game? So it'd be interesting to see how Rowett plays against QPR, whether he goes with the same sort of team, whether he actually starts Burke. But
I think there'll be some changes come the QPR game, I've got to be honest. Yeah, I think there will be some. Obviously, there's going to be the one because Mason Bennett won't be able to start. He'll be back again. Well, I personally don't think he'll be back this season. I think that'll be the end of him now for the season. Mm-hmm. I can't see him being able to come back and play any part between now and the end of the season. But you never know. I mean, we have to wait until the results come back. It'd be interesting to see if you're right. If he does put Burke in, I think Watmore will start. I think he'll start at QPR. Obviously, he's got to keep Bradshaw in. He hasn't got anyone else. Burke, I don't think he's probably ready to start.
Gracie, here's a question for you. How do you feel about Fleming playing in the lone striker role, where Bradshaw would be normally, and then putting Honeyman in the 10 role, and then starting Burke and Watmore? So having kind of like Watmore, Honeyman, Burke with Fleming in that kind of target man sort of position?
Well, do you know, I watched Fleming at the weekend, right? And I think over the last few games in particular, I mean, at Cardiff, he was a bit of a, seems so harsh to say, but a bit of a passenger at Cardiff. You didn't see too much from him. He didn't create an awful lot. He didn't, you know, he wasn't involved too much in the attacking play, other than that chance he set up for Jamie Shackleton. Again, on Saturday, I don't think he did.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
An awful lot. And it would be interesting to see him play that role. And if it is just to give Tom Bradshaw a rest. And he can put in, because we've got the option of George Honeyman in there, who did it at the start of the season. And to be fair to him, he didn't do a bad job in that position. The question is then, yeah, is Burke fit enough to be able to play in the position that he in the position that George Honeyman's vacating, or do you go with Vogelsammer, or do you go with someone else? Enfe, for example. Yeah, mm-hmm. So there's I wouldn't be adverse to seeing him play that position. Because there may become the time that he might not have an option. And if Bradshaw gets injured, for instance, but I think he would take Burke in that role probably before he'd go off Fleming, because Burke's natural position is a centre forward.
Is it really?
He's still got Bury, haven't we?
Bury won't be back to the end of February with his injury.
Right.
But again, he's another option that could play through the middle. But again, I think he would take the Burke option first.
I'm just thinking that coming in, you know, getting February out of the way, well, I know we've got a lot of games there, but if we can hold our own in February, then coming into March, April, May, with Bury back and having Essie available and all that, all of a sudden, we've got some fast players in that team. Bury, Burke, Essie, do you know what I mean? Ben Fleming.
So we'll become even more of a counter-attacking team. It'll become even more of that. That's basically what the game plan will be.
Yeah.
Particularly will be to soak up as much pressure as possible, and then it'll be to hit them, you know, hit them as fast as you possibly can going forward.
Definitely.
No, that's it. It was interesting as well, listening to the show, what Omar did with a Sunderland fan, the Inside Man, which is on YouTube now, or it's on the podcast with where you find out about Watmore. It's some part two of that, if you've not already listened to it. But it was there where Omar asked a question about, you know, Honeyman, that, you know, we seem to have not got the player what he was at Sunderland. And in Stoke Me, he come on fire. So,
yeah,
you know, it's an interesting show. You know, if you've not already listened to it, have a listen to it. It's on YouTube, it's on the pod. As I said, it's on the you know, the show about Watmore. It's part two on there. But again, we are recording tomorrow night, or tonight, if you're listening to it in the morning. The QPR game will be out as a pod Friday morning, and now on YouTube from midday on Friday. That will give you hopefully a nice insight into what we can expect. QPR, I was speaking to the guy earlier from QPR by text, and he said, it'll be an interesting show because I'll be able to tell you how shit we are in a minute. But sod's law, we go there and they're fucking come on fire.
One win in 15, I believe. And we're not a Millwall fan if you don't think it'll be 2 wins in 16 by the time we leave Loftus Road on Saturday night.
No, I suppose.
And it's my birthday Sunday, so they're not allowed to muck it up for me.
Now, there you go.
There we go. Do you know what I mean?
Another a car park. I'll probably get my head punched in by the sounds of it.
There ain't a car park at fucking QPR, is there? It's called fucking South African Road, isn't it?
There is no car park at QPR. Not at all. No.
That's so weird. I remember a few years ago we went there and the old Bill fucking marched us right past their fucking home pub and through the estate to get us round to the other side of the stand. And it was like, mate, really? That's clever. And then I went a couple of years ago. I said, I like going to QPR. It's a good little ground. But I went there a couple of years ago and I knew someone who lived next door to their manager and at the time. And he managed to get me some hospitality tickets for there. So, man.
It reminds me a lot of Luton.
Yeah, it does.
The ground is, yeah. It reminds you a lot of Luton.
It's quite weird because we were up there eating pies in the W12 bar. or the W12 room, whatever you want to call it, eating pies and standing next to us having a conversation with some Stan Bowles. And you're like, oh. So the older people probably know more about that.
Pies in the hospitality lounge.
Yeah. Little pies. They were nice as well. They were like, yeah, they were good pies, but yeah, no, it's good. It's one of the only stadiums, the only moan I've got probably about QPR is fucking a fortune.
Is it really? Oh, they do charge
£36 a ticket. Yeah, £36 a ticket for restricted view.
Do you know, here's a fun fact, right? It's the only ground I've been to twice where there's been no fans.
During COVID times.
It's the only ground that, do you know, and I've only been there when there's been no fans.
You say no fans, so, no fans at all, no home fans either.
No, because of COVID. Because I was lucky enough, I got to go to both the games behind closed doors.
Yeah.
On work duties. And I've been there twice. And times there was no fans. I didn't go to the opening game last season, holiday, so I didn't make it. But no, it'll be the first time I've been there with fans. Ground, isn't it? So it'll be quite nice, actually, to be where to be there.
It's going to be full. I don't know how many we've sold, but we've got both upper and lower tier, so I think we sold a fair few. Is it really? Nice. Yeah, it's going to be a good crank there. There's some good news, lads. Sheffield United have beat Wrexham 3-1, and they've done a Swansea. Sharp scored in 90 minute plus four, so 94th minute, and Burge scored in the 96th minute.
Wow.
So the 94th and the 96th. Yeah, Burnley have won every game so far back. That's eight games in the league they've won. Someone on the group chat we're on with the championships done, I posted it on our group of if the league started since the World Cup, then we'd be 10th. So
I think they're 17 points clear of third place as well. They cleared the hurdle. I think they'll be in the Premier League once more. I don't think anyone's gonna.
Oh, I honestly still think they're gonna fuck it.
No.
Honestly, I think Sheffield.
I mean, they're only taken
by Middlesbrough. Sheffield will get overtaken by Middlesbrough.
Well, Middlesbrough will definitely be a big sort of challenge for it. Middlesbrough definitely finishing the playoffs, to be honest with you. But I just can't see Burnley or Sheffield United slipping up now. Go back to the Sunday game very quickly. What do you make of Cooper's goal?
I thought it was a terrific goal. Yeah. Do you know, it's
14-1.
I have to say, because from where we sit, I didn't get the greatest of viewers in terms of how we got it in, because I thought he had on the floor and it was someone else that got it in. But then I saw him over doing his big celebration in front of the Coldplay Lane end, which I have to say, there was no better sight in football than a packed out Coldplay Lane end. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, the whole thing filled out, especially the way in, both the top tier and the bottom tier. Yeah, again, we probably could have been a lot more vocal at times. I think, we lost our way a bit more fans in the last.
No atmosphere, was there, really? You didn't deserve that spot.
It's 85,000 fans there, which is the record since
1995.
Well, 95.
1995, game against Chelsea and the round of the FA Cup.
Well, there you go. I mean, you expect for that.
Which went to a replay.
Rolling, but it wasn't like that at all. Didn't feel that way, which is a bit of a shame. But sometimes I think you need the players as well to spark the fans and get them into life. In the old days when we kind of played 4-4-2, direct, get them at them, aggression, it does kind of, increase the emotions of the fans. But with the style of football we play at the moment, it'd be more of a passing sort of game and, a bit more kind of sitting back. Maybe it doesn't quite get the fans on their side as much as it would do normally. But no, I mean, the goal was a great goal. I think he sort of scooped it off the floor, didn't he? I think he went for the header
he fell over, didn't he?
If you want to see that video, it's on our YouTube video recorded from the Jeremy, sorry, not the Jeremy Kyle stand, the Colmlo Lane stand. You've got Honeyman's, I think it was Honeyman's corner,
yeah,
laid it in, and then, yeah, Cooper scoring, and to be fair.
He kind of gets fouled, didn't he, Mickey? From memory, I think he goes up for the header, gets knocked over, he lands on the floor.
I think if it doesn't go in, it could be a penalty if it doesn't go in.
So he's kind of he's standing for his right foot, and it just goes into the top corner. I mean, it's a great finish and a great improvisation from him. Quick question: what did you make of their goal? Is it Kurchin or Searching? I can't remember.
Searching.
Was at fault for that goal?
See, now for me, I don't think he saves it either way. Because where the header goes in off the post, I don't think Long saves it either way.
You're right in the sense that it's a break finish and it's not going to keep.
I think if he comes out,
yes,
if he comes out, he's got to claim it.
That's the point. I mean, he comes out.
If he comes out, he's got to claim it.
If he stays on this line. I mean, there's a chance it could probably go in anyway because since that call, that post, it's very hard to get down there.
I think that's what Gary said in the press conference. He said, look, I think at the end of the day, if the keeper comes out, he should claim it. But the likelihood is even if he hadn't come out, it was going to go in either way. So it's a difficult one because it's pretty much going to go in, you've got a bit of saving grace for the goalkeeper.
Quick question. Would Bart got there, do you think? Your opinion, would Bart have got there? Would he punch the ball out or grab the ball? Would he have done better in that situation, you say?
Sure, I think it's difficult. If you look at such how high the line was when the ball came in the first place, I think that was wrong. I think the line was far too high. Does Bart get to it? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think he's the greatest at coming out and claiming the ball necessarily. His movement's not the best, but in terms of shot stopping, yeah, he's brilliant. And that's where he's got the edge on Long. But I think Long as the keeper overall is probably as an all round goalkeeper is probably better. It's so hard to say. I don't know as to whether he would have got it or not. It's clear that he's gone to get the ball and he's ended up punching the guy instead. So, how dare you score against me because you're getting a right hook instead.
The bug goes off passion, doesn't he, at that point?
He did whack him, though, didn't he? Fuck, you know, you've seen some of the pictures.
Yeah, it was half a whack.
He's fighting. Yeah. Lucky. I have to throw him, by the way, those listening. One of the historians, if you're listening, Neil, maybe you can check it out. But on Saturday, we had an attendance of 18,524 fans. And they said that's the most we've had since 95. That's the largest record now since it was previously set in 1995. Well, 1995, we had 18,573 people in the stadium. So how did Saturday beat that when it was lower?
Man, interesting.
Historian, and you can suss it out and be able to confirm or deny or not. But the figures I've seen now a link for the attendance for the Chelsea game because that season we had two replays.
Yeah, Arsenal
played that. Yeah, we played Arsenal at home. They had 17,000.
Since that game, therefore, that game 95 was slightly higher, and this has been the biggest one since that was second.
No, they were. I don't know. They said it was the largest.
It's 18,524 was Saturday's attendance.
Yeah, well, against Chelsea on the 18th of January 1995 was 18,573.
Yeah, so that's the highest attendance since then. So the game we had Saturday was the highest attendance since that game.
So he's
right, okay.
not as high.
So it's not a new record.
No. Right. No, it's just the highest attendance
since that.
I just thought. Yeah, right. Which I believe it was when you think about it,
with the Giles, and they were thinking it could be the top three. That this attendance certainly could have been the within the top three in the Den ever.
Yeah, but that's a weird one to do. Because, I mean, think about it realistically. I know that probably the advantage was, I think, probably the away fans, because there was, what, just about 2,800 or just over 2,800 away fans, because they'd done, what, top and bottom tier. And they could have got more in there, because I think each stand, if it was fully open, is about 5,000 per stand.
Well,
I think,
roughly. Bottom weren't open, were they? They kind of...
They keep that shut so that people don't interfere as such. But
yeah,
I would have thought the Huddersfield game we had a lot in, but probably not on the away fans because obviously we didn't have them. The Everton game, again, we probably wouldn't have had a lot there because Everton, we wouldn't have had a lot for Everton. But also the Leicester game, I would have thought we'd possibly have more for the Leicester game. The Brighton game was packed.
I think Brighton had two tiers, didn't they, for that game, from memory? I'm pretty sure they
did. No, they didn't. I think Leicester did, but Brighton didn't. Leicester did, Brighton didn't. Because I'm trying to think back to... Because I think the Leicester attendance was 17,000, I think. I don't think he quite breached the 18 mark. I think it was 17,000.
Yeah, well, Arsenal, when we played Arsenal in that year, we only had 17,718, I think it says. Let me have a look.
There's a game we played 17,000 years ago that had 18,000. I can't remember when that was, but that had 18,000.
Because it then actually is a 22,500 stadium.
Is it really that much?
It's capacity now. I think it's about 18. It's about 19,000.
19.5, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's I think it's 22,500 if you had every seat taken. Right. But because obviously they never ever fill every seat because of safety and crowds and all of that, then I think it's round about 18,500, isn't it?
Okay.
Because you obviously you're taking some other bits and pieces and stuff, and I think it's about 18,500. But there's still a lot of people, mate, to be in a Den. It's just a shame that we can't get that week in, week out.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. You know, Gary alluded to that in the press conference. He said it'd be, you know, he'd love it to be like that. He'd love it to be like that because it makes such a difference. You have, you know, 4,000 more, 5,000 more fans in there. And look, because you've got the opportunity, while you're in the Championship, you've got the opportunity of the away sides bringing more followings if it's allowed to happen. I mean, you've seen a number of teams this year have had the bottom tier rather than the top tier.
Yeah, but I think some of that, yeah. But
the reasons, I believe.
Yeah.
Because it's something to do with the steep.
That's happening, which is, well, it's quite weird because obviously I sit on a Championship group and we'll finish up in a sec, but we'll do this bit. But there seems to be a drive between every club that are using the safety rule and people standing on seats, potentially people falling forward when the team scores and all this sort of stuff, that they're trying to force, because it's happened at Sheffield United, it's happened at a couple of other clubs where they're literally trying to, you know, smaller the crowds down, whether that be home ends or away ends. Because I think whatever they do on the away end, on the north end, they pretty much have got to look at it on the Coldplay Lane end as well, because it's still the same steepness, and they're trying to force people out of the alley, out of the aisles and all of that. But I think it's more crowd than club driven, because of such.
I think they're looking at trying to sort something for next season, aren't they, to try and either to sort whatever that safety issue is out, because I remember one of Steve Kavanagh's columns back at the start of the season was when it first was mentioned about the fans being in the bottom tier of the away end. as to whether or as to why that it was happening was to do with the ground safety or something. So
yeah, I think it's a safety advisory.
I think they will try and do something to sort something out, because that bottom tier is wasted. I mean, what's the point of having it?
The problem being it will cost a fair amount of money if they were to change that to away fan at the top, home fans at the bottom, because it's all mixed at the back. There's only one lot of kiosks and everything else. So the kiosks are all top tier, aren't they? I think they're all bottom tier. But there's one kiosk for the lot. So it'll be, if you're listening to this, walking the dog with earphones, fucking Joe's coming for you now. But listen,
Peterborough, though, on the last home game of last season, where they had it mixed, you know, they had away fans and home fans in it.
You couldn't do that with Everton, could you?
Yeah, but they could find a way to make it work. A lot of Premier League ground, or in fact, a lot of Championship ground, have split ends,
don't they? Yeah, the problem we've got as well is that safe standing. Safe standing would be ideal in Millwall, but the problem you've got is that we were an all-seater stadium. So to transfer it into a safe standing would potentially have issues, because the concrete's only so wide for seeing. And you know how tight he is there when you sit there. If you've got fairly big legs, or you've got someone who's fucking about 8 foot tall standing behind you, then it's in. I mean, you know, it is what it is, I suppose. But not a lot.
I sit on the top tier, right at the front by the wall, and where I'm quite sort of tall myself, if I stand up, the wall sort of gets just above my knee. And you do get a sense of feeling. If you lean over too much, you think, you know what, if that's
going to be
all
shit. You're going to be in Cardiff. It's funny, that was.
Yeah.
When the Cardiff fan fell, landed on the chairs, the police thought he was dead, so started to try and do CPR. And the fall cost him a broken finger, and the old bill cost him a couple of broken ribs, I think. That's allegedly the story, but we're safe at. I'll leave you this one before I come to your final thoughts. And it was one thing, obviously, I don't know if you boys know, but I used to be fan on the board, and it was something what was...
Knew that one.
I don't like talking about. I was speaking to a fan today, yeah, a fella today who I know, right? And I'm not going to mention your name, but you're probably listening. You know who you are. He didn't even know that I was fan on the board at one point, and he didn't even know that I was involved in AMS doing the regen battle. Didn't know, he's not new, but he's been around for a while. But yeah, that was one that quite shocked me, because I went, oh, didn't you know that? One thing will come to light. There was obviously Steve Cavanagh is quite a boxing fan, and I think he's tried to look at various boxing matches over the time. Okay. But if we take a boxing match, we have a higher capacity in the ground, including the seating on the pitch, than the O2 does.
Okay, that's interesting.
I think we have a higher capacity with the ground. With the seats and all that round the ring and taking the stadium, we pretty much have a higher capacity. I think it's close to 20,000, and I think the O2 is about 18. That we have a higher capacity
as well.
I think it is more, but I can't remember that. But it is more than the O2. But obviously, it depends when you're going to do it. When you're going to do a fight, it'd have to be quite warm, wouldn't it? Because I know, I think he looked at a Chris Eubank fight a couple of years ago. But it'd be great to get a couple of the Millwall boys boxers, like Chris, or you know, a couple of the other lads, get a good card with some of them at the Den. That would be phenomenal. That's what the Den was allegedly done. Herbie Hind
against Bent, Michael Bent, wasn't it?
I think it was. I can't remember. But yeah, someone will know. If you know, get involved in the comments. Right, you know the way this ends. We're nearly there, 60 minutes. Joe, any final words apart from please don't hit me, Vog Slammer?
Yes, Vog Slammer, I love you, and I'm sure you will score for us one day. I hope you row it. he doesn't make too many changes. Obviously, the obvious one being what more coming over for Bennett. Yeah, I hate to see Honeyman lose out. I'd like to see, you know, Burke sort of feature somehow. But if he starts with Bradshaw again, which is fine, hopefully he'll bring Burke on a lot sooner. But I think we've got a good chance getting all the points. I think we're set up for a counter-attack. We do play quite well away from home. We haven't played quite well away from home at the moment. I think with the likes of Burke and Watmore and a bit of pace in the team now, we should hopefully get a decent result against them on Saturday. So fingers crossed. So hopefully we'll get...
Prediction?
Sorry, mate? Prediction? I'm going to go for... I'm going to go for 2-0. 2-0. 2-0 Millwall.
Fox Lemmer and Fleming to score, no doubt.
Yeah, Fox Lemmer. It'll probably be... I reckon Watmore will get one. Watmore and Fleming, I reckon.
Okay.
Alex, final thought. What's your thoughts for QBR and give us a prediction then?
Yeah, look, I don't think he'll make too many changes. I agree with Joe. I think he will put Duncan Watmore in. I think that's the obvious change. I think he'll stick with Bradshaw again. I don't think he's got, personally, I don't think he's got another choice. I think he'll stick with Bradders. And yeah, I'm also going to be quite confident going into QPR. One win in 15 going into the game. So there's a bit of pressure coming there, I think, on their new manager as well. They've kept some of their key players, haven't been quiet or have been quiet, like the ones that were decent at the Den back in, I think it was September when they come and played. I'm going to agree with Joe. I'm going to go over 2-0 win. I fancy Bradshaw and George Saville to score.
Okay.
His shirt's on the back of Joe there on his wall there.
Saville's shirt is there. There we go.
Right, that's it. You'll be listening.
And let another office if you want to give me $5,000 for it, by the way. Well, anyone would give me $5,000 for it, but I thought I'd just aim high, you know.
Do you know what? It'd be fucked if someone covered in the shit. I'll give
you he would.
I'll give you 50 pence now. Listen, you've been listening to that Millwall podcast, and thank you very much. And thank you very much to all the new listeners who've been finding us and coming in and downloading the shows. For the last 3 weeks, we've beat week-on-week records, and it's an absolute honour and very, very humbling. We do this because we just want to have a laugh and a chat with the lads, and it's a good bit of banter, and we talk bollocks most of the time, but we just started this many years ago, many moons ago now, me and Omar, just because we missed the pub banter after the game and before game and stuff, and we started it with a Friday Night Live and all that, and we're getting close now to 300 episodes, believe it or not, which is mental. But yeah, week on week, we are smashing our records, what we've had for listeners and downloads, and that's a massive thank you to you lot who are listening on your dog walk, in the gym, on the CrossFit, the exercise bike, you're running, you driving to work, delivering milk, delivering whatever you're doing. Thank you very, very much for your support week in, week out with us, and hopefully that we bring you some form of enjoyment, shouting at the radio, disagreeing with Joe, disagreeing with me, disagreeing with Alex. So yeah, thank you very, very much. Truly humbling to see us growing like that for a little old show, but we're there and we're getting there, so thank you very much.
Can you play us
just one
down with Mickey?
I will put Hey Jude in a minute for you, don't panic. Thanks. But just one other thing, because it's gone very, very quiet, and I don't necessarily agree that it's suddenly gone very, very quiet. If you're still waiting for any news on these memorial stones, or you've paid for these and it's gone very, very silent, get in touch, drop us a DM, drop us an email at info@thatmillpodcast.com, just put in the subject bar memorial stone And maybe, you know, we've got a bit of a voice, and I can stand my foot as good as the others, and let's see if we can get something moving on this, because I don't agree with people putting their head in the sand when memorial stones are not just about money, they're about people. People have paid good money to you know, remember loved ones and people who sadly aren't here no more. So if you are involved in that, or you've been affected by that, where you've paid and whatnot, get in touch. I just want to see if, you know, what sort of numbers are around there. And maybe I need to call the AMS guy, the money guy, out of retirement for us and get him to dig into this fucking scumbag company and see what we can do there. Don't worry, he's on a retainer. Just in case we need to bring him out of retirement. So don't panic there. I know Nick's doing it on his show, but I'm just keen because Nick's obviously paid for one as well. Him and the History Show have paid for one of our ex-managers, I think. But nothing great. I'm not promising the world with it, but just let us know what's what. And you know, if we can help try and make it a bit more vocal again, then we will. We've got a voice. We can make a bit of noise with it. So, yeah. That's it from us. Chill out. Got QPR at the weekend. Before that game, you will have Omar doing the Inside Man with the W12 podcast. And hopefully that will be a good listen and we get some insight into there. So that's it. The Millwall podcast is over for another episode. Did want to go to 60 minutes, but thanks to Alex, we've gone over, and me, and we've gone over. So, yeah. Follow us. Make sure if you listen to us on iTunes or Apple Podcast or Spotify, make sure now, especially on Apple, that you've got a follow button, and every new episode what we do will come straight into your inbox so you don't have to search for it anymore. That's it. Right now, after this, you're going to hear, "Hey Jude, just for Joe."
Like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the Talk Sport Fan Network.
Talk Sport. Powered by fans.